This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, toward a more integrated and multi-pronged approach to U.S. border security and immigration policy. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. What is the most effective, humane, and sustainable way to handle not only the surge of migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border, but also the broken immigration system? That is the huge challenge that faces the Biden administration as it grapples with the root causes of the flow of migrants from El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, and with the politics and policies surrounding their arrival and adjudication at the border and beyond. According to The Economist magazine, a rising number of migrants from these Northern Triangle countries are fleeing violence, poverty, and hurricanes. Mexicans are coming to escape a contracting economy. President Joe Biden has tapped Vice President Kamala Harris to lead the administration's efforts with Mexico and the Northern Triangle countries, which need help in stemming migration at the southern border. Reuters news agency reports that Vice President Harris and Guatemalan President Alejandro Yamatei spoke by phone last week and agreed to work together to address the root causes of migration to the United States. The United States has dealt with spikes in illegal immigration before, often caused by forces beyond any president's control, says The Economist magazine. Last year, former President Donald Trump sealed the border from entrance by invoking Title 42. That's a public health order that authorized the rapid expulsion of all border crossers and asylum seekers because of concerns about COVID-19. The topic of immigration and the current crisis at the border has animated opposition Republicans who are blaming the Biden administration for the surge of unaccompanied migrants. Matthew Continetti writes that by lifting many Trump executive orders, Biden helped to create the crisis he now faces. Will the politics of immigration and the continuing flow of migrants prove to be a political quagmire for the Biden administration, or can President Biden and Vice President Harris forge a bipartisan congressional consensus to effectively manage this humanitarian, economic, and political test? For more on the issue, we turn to two distinguished analysts. Cynthia Arnson is director of the Latin American program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. She is a widely recognized expert on Latin American politics, political economy, and U.S. policy in the Western Hemisphere. And Doris Meissner, she's a former commissioner of the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service in the Bill Clinton administration, currently a senior fellow at the Migration Policy Institute. And both ladies join me via Microsoft Teams. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
Thank you.
Doris Meissner, let me begin with you. As I said in the introduction, we can all agree that surges of migrants are cyclical. Certainly COVID-19 added to restraint in 2020, but it's a political issue as well. Some critics are saying that this current influx of migrants from Central America is in part due to the Trump administration's failure to hand off properly to the Biden administration and maybe dismantling important infrastructure. I'd like to get your take on what you think of that, and if you think conversely that the Biden administration may have been caught a bit ill-prepared or off guard by this influx, and perhaps did the reversal of some of the Trump executive orders wittingly or unwittingly send mixed signals to the region that a more pro-immigrant president was in office and wouldn't be as harsh?
Well, I think the two actually are linked. It's not really an either or. It certainly is the case that the policies that were in place during the Trump administration were fundamentally to shut down the ability for people to have any access to the asylum system at the southern border. And as the Trump administration completed its last year in office with the pandemic and the, as you noted, public health order, that really in many ways sealed what the Trump administration was trying to achieve. So as these numbers began to increase last fall, you could see that there was a change coming. Definitely the Biden campaign talked about different immigration policies. That information travels quickly into the region. And so people were primed for a change. But it's also true that the numbers that actually began to appear once Biden was inaugurated in January, February, are much higher than had been the case in prior months of the year. So they then spiked much more quickly, I think, than the Biden administration expected, and against a backdrop of a real reduction in facilities, particularly by Health and Human Services, which is the agency that places migrants once they come into the country. So in that way, it's both the Trump policies and the changes in policies that the new administration brought with it and the expectations that that aroused.
Indeed. Of course, many critics want to just blame the Biden administration. But Cynthia, I'd like to get your take on the factors that play into the surge we're seeing. Do you think that the rise in migrants has to do with what may be considered a more favorable policy by Biden? What other factors play into it?
I think that certainly what Doris said, the creation of hope and expectation that there would be a kinder, gentler response from Biden administration officials was an important message or hope or perception of people in the region. And we also have to look at the particular moment that we're in. Latin America is the region that has been absolutely the hardest hit economically by the COVID-19 pandemic, has had the highest number of deaths of any region of the world in terms of percentage of the cases that result in deaths. And then at the end of 2020, in November, you had these two monstrous hurricanes crossing the Atlantic and just devastating Honduras, Guatemala, parts of Nicaragua. And that's had an enormous impact on livelihoods. There's some figures from the World Food Program that indicate that in Central America, just as a result of those two hurricanes, almost 7 million people lost their homes and livelihoods. The hurricanes destroyed hundreds of thousands of hectares of basic food crops in the four countries that include the Northern Triangle and Nicaragua, destroyed 10,000 hectares of coffee farmland in Honduras alone. So there's been the messaging on the one hand combined with these extremely dire situation in Central America. As we know, poverty, the lack of opportunity, gang violence, poor governance, corruption, all of those kinds of things have long served as drivers of migration. But when you add to this the devastation in economic terms, particularly of COVID-19 and of these two hurricanes, not to, you know, use a pun, but you do have a kind of a perfect storm for a combination of push and pull factors.
Well, that's very well said. We get a much better understanding of the push factor, so to speak, on the Central American side that perhaps because of the COVID and the hurricanes really helped to raise the numbers. Back to you, Doris Meissner. How would you assess the situation on the U.S. side of the border as we speak? What types of migrants are we seeing? And what is the Biden administration's policy toward unaccompanied children? How are you seeing that play out?
Well, it's an interesting and complicated picture because the Biden administration actually is allowing almost only unaccompanied minors into the country. The Title 42 public health order is still in place. And so most of the migrants coming to the southern border are being expelled. Now, the largest share are actually coming from Mexico, and they are repeat crossers. So those are generally adults. They're virtually all being expelled. Most of the families that are coming are being expelled, although that is more mixed, because it's been unclear, depending on where along the border one is, how Mexico's policy is shifting in accepting family migrants back. So it's the unaccompanied minors that are the only group that entirely is being allowed to come into the United States. Those numbers are now about 20,000. That, as humanitarian flows go, is not an unmanageable number, but it is an unmanageable number when you're not set up to handle it. And it's definitely an unmanageable number when it's at hundreds or several, in some cases, thousand a day. And that's what it is that we're seeing. We're seeing the real crush of very large numbers quickly and the inability to do what I would call throughput, which is that U.S. law requires for minors that within 72 hours, they be handed over from the Border Patrol, in other words, from enforcement officials, to the Department of Health and Human Services for the purposes of placement with a sponsor in the country. And it's that 72-hour period where the heavy crunch is taking place now, because Health and Human Services does not have enough facilities and hasn't been able to quickly enough identify sponsors. The population of people that are coming, these unaccompanied young people, are largely young men, mostly between the ages of 13 and 17, even more heavily between the ages of 15 and 17, which makes sense with what it is that Cindy described, and that we know that this is the group that tends to be the most endangered by cartel recruiting and gang violence. So these are young men that are looking for safety in their future, and they largely have a relative that's in the United States. About 40% have a parent, sometimes two parents, in the United States, and another 40 or so percent have a more distant relative in the United States. And what HHS needs to do is verify that those relatives truly are who they say they are, so that these young people are in a safe setting when they are released to a sponsor rather than in danger.
Doris, very quickly, do you see HHS ramping up as fast as it can with respect to this problem?
They are ramping up. The throughput is still not what it needs to be, but more facilities are being put into place. More staff are working on the issues. The criteria are changing. The Trump administration had very strict criteria that everybody in the household of a sponsor would need to be cleared through background checks. That's now been streamlined to involve the sponsor alone. So these changes are all being made, but under very stressful circumstances.
We'll be back in just a moment to get Cindy Arnson's take on the other side of the border. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Castiel, and joining me via Microsoft Teams are Cindy Arnson, Director of the Latin American Program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and Doris Meissner, from whom you just heard, former Commissioner of the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service, now a senior fellow at the Migration Policy Institute. We're assessing the causes and consequences of the influx of migrants from Central America to the United States and what can be done to ease the situation on both sides of the border. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Here's a shout out to loyal listener and Facebook fan Paul Ngonga from Nairobi, Kenya. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Let me now turn to Cindy Arnson. Cindy, let's look at the other side of the border. We have Vice President Harris now being tasked to address the root causes of the problem of migration from the Northern Triangle countries. She was speaking to the Guatemalan president last week. What is your assessment of her role? What can she and our diplomats achieve in these countries, Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, and even Mexico? And are they being receptive, these leaders?
I think the United States has significant influence in Central America. The relationship with Mexico is obviously much different and is kind of a standalone, although Mexico and its attitude towards migration across its southern border from Guatemala and detaining migrants along the border with the United States is a key player in all of this. But in Central America, there's going to be, I think, a more difficult time than Joe Biden had when he was vice president and was given the responsibility for the response in Central America. At the time in 2014, at the time of the first surge of unaccompanied minors. And that was a role that he played really from 2014 until the end of the Obama administration, 2 years later. The governments are much more complicated. There is a government in Honduras where the president's brother has just been sentenced to life in prison for drug trafficking. There are all kinds of allegations of the role of the president himself in narco trafficking. In El Salvador, there's a very popular but populist president, Nayib Bukele, who has run roughshod over a lot of democratic norms that are critical to the upholding of democratic governance. So I think it's going to be a real give and take in terms of offering foreign assistance, offering credits via the Development Finance Corporation to private sector companies to invest in exchange for certain kinds of, you know, maintenance of democratic reforms, of transparency, of movement against corrupt individuals, of respect for judicial independence. And there are lots of issues that need to be fixed, a lot of reforms that are needed in Central America. And the governments actually are not the only players. There are really important actors in the private sector, in the business community, and in civil society, among civil society organizations, think tanks. So a lot of ally seeking in society, not just with the particular government.
Indeed. Just very quickly, is there one among the three countries that you see as most problematic from the climactic as well as, you know, narco trafficking and poverty and so forth side of the issue?
Yes. Well, I think Honduras probably is the most problematic for the questions of leadership, which I mentioned, you know, a president who many believe is an unindicted co-conspirator of his brother. It is a country, as I mentioned early in the program, that was simply devastated by these two hurricanes, Iota and Eta. It is one of the three poorest countries in the hemisphere, along with Haiti and Nicaragua. And I think that the combination of governance, of lack of opportunity, of climate-based destruction, and also of gang violence is really the most problematic. And it's interesting that El Salvador, under the Obama administration, was the sort of anointed preferred partner. El Salvador was one of three countries around the world that had a compact with the Millennium Challenge Corporation. And I think now that role has been transferred to Guatemala, which is the country that is seen as perhaps in the best position to work with the United States on stemming migration, but also in a capacity to undertake these reforms.
Doris Meissner, you've seen so much in your years at the former Immigration and Naturalization Service. What's your take on how much the U.S. can do to mitigate the immigration flows on the other side of the border? And we know also that President Biden has in his immigration reform proposal proposed at least $4 billion to address poverty, corruption, and narco trafficking. How important is that, in your view, to the holistic approach to a more rational immigration system?
I think it's very important, but it is on a timeline that is very different from what we have to address on a day-to-day basis when you see what's going on at the border today. In other words, I think the important way to be thinking about this is that for the United States, from the standpoint of migration across the Southwest border, since the early 1970s, the issue was Mexican migration. Most of the migration across the Southwest border was young male Mexican migrants looking to avoid the Border Patrol and find work in the United States. And that has been the way in which U.S. enforcement has taken place since, as I say, the early 1970s. Now, up until about 2012, that was the case. You know, 90% of the apprehensions were of Mexicans. Since 2012, that has changed. And Central Americans now are the dominant flow. 75% of the apprehensions across the Southwest border, increasingly since 2012, have been of Central Americans. However, the United States has not fully adjusted to that shift. Our infrastructure along the border, the strategies, the policies have really continued to reflect that Mexican migration outlook. And so the prior spikes in 2014, again 2016, 2019, basically have not recognized that this is an enduring phenomenon. This is, when you listen to Cindy talking about this, the reasons that people are coming are not simply a blip. And that adjustment in our policies on the U.S. side as well as toward the region have to shift. And what it is that the Biden administration is talking about is that shift. But it is a shift that will take many years. It is not something that will show results in 6 to 12 months. So we have to be patient with that. But we also have to be aggressive. We have to dial up to really recognize that you have to start somewhere. And President Biden actually has said that. You've got to start somewhere on these things and sustain the commitment. And I think that the best analogy is really what it is that has happened with Mexico. We were having this conversation in the 1980s or early 1990s when I was in the government. We would have been equally frustrated about what the long-term prospects were for Mexican migration. But we did NAFTA in 1993, and we predicted at the time that it would take 15 to 20 years for that to have the effect of changing the migration pressures. And in fact, it happened. Mexico is a different country from these countries, but one has to take the long view that at the end of the day, without trying to change the conditions, lots of other things need to happen as well, but that's a critical ingredient.
And is there any one particular measure that you think we could take here on the U.S. side that would go far? What about helping reform the legal immigration system?
Yeah, that's the other missing piece here. And that, of course, is a hugely important missing piece, because if our immigration laws were up to date, then so many of the people that are in the United States from these countries would have the advantage of a legalization program, and they would then be able to bring their relatives to the United States legally rather than the circumstances that we see. Moreover, we would have more employment-based opportunities for immigration. Our laws are not suited to our needs as an economy for employment-based immigration. And some of the people from Central America might then qualify for work visas to come to the United States and not be trying to use the asylum system, which is by and large not suited for this flow.
Cindy Arnson, you get the last word.
Well, first, Carol, I should never have the last word when appearing side by side with Doris Meisner. She should always have the last word, given the depth of her experience, both in and out of government. I would say that I agree with Doris that the long-term process of reform takes years, and that's what these aid packages are designed to address. But the needs on the border are urgent and pressing and have to be dealt with right away. The Biden administration has tried to counter the messaging that the border is open, something that's been very adeptly exploited by the human smugglers, the so-called coyotes, to lure people to spend thousands and thousands of dollars. These are humble people without those kinds of resources that borrow and go into debt to be able to finance the journey and pay off the smugglers. But to counter that messaging through radio and TV announcements as part of the effort to stem the flow, I think that there is a need to have long-term assistance programs that can be reliable, that will not be turned off on a whim as they were in 2019 by the Trump administration, doing really irreparable damage to a lot of the investments that had already been made by the United States, with a lot of organizations that were implementing evidence-based programs that actually work on crime prevention and reductions in gang violence and giving young people a sense of job skills, of a future that doesn't involve gang affiliation or migrating to the United States. And it's really important to find all of the sectors of society in the different Central American countries that have a similar stake in reforms and strengthen their ability to push, along with the United States pushing from the outside. But it is really critical to get a handle on the border. And what is totally the case is that political time is very unforgiving. And this undoubtedly will be an issue, unless it's very quickly brought under control. This will be an issue in the U.S. midterm elections in 2022. All kinds of ways in which Biden is being attacked by opponents, but also by Democratic members of Congress on the border that are unhappy with the way the administration is handling things. So there's a real crying need to get the border situation straightened out quickly.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this immigration edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my terrific guests, Cindy Arnson, Director of the Latin American Program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and Doris Meisner, Senior Fellow at the Migration Policy Institute.
Thanks, Carol.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.